This is Fresh Air. Rock and roll is partly about attitude. Attitude is just about the only thing Johnny Suede has. He's not very talented, but he's got the pose. He wears a huge pompadour, piled about half a foot high, and he has the coolest black suede shoes. Johnny Suede is a character that was created by Tom DiCillo for his own one-man show. DiCillo has written and directed a new movie around the character. Playing Johnny in the film is Brad Pitt, who's best known for his role in Thelma and Louise as the hitchhiker. The eccentric Australian rock singer Nick Cave plays the part of an eccentric rock singer. This is DiCillo's first feature film as a director. He was the cinematographer on Jim Jarmusch's early films, Stranger Than Paradise and Permanent Vacation. DiCillo's new movie, Johnny Suede, opens next week. Here's how DiCillo describes Johnny.
He's typical of a certain male type of behavior. He's a guy who feels desperately the need to cover up, to hide, to prevent anybody from seeing the problems, the fears, the ugliness that he may have inside him. He chooses to, as a facade, what he thinks is the utter image of perfection, which is Ricky Nelson, you know, the guy with the voice of silk, with a face like a wandering troubadour, and a guy who also was famous for sanitizing completely rock and roll.
Johnny strikes me as the kind of character who really wants to reach some kind of, you know, rock and roll perfection, but he's not going to do it through music. He's going to do it through a hairstyle,
right,
and shoes, you know.
Right. Yes. Well, that's the point. It's like MTV today. It's like, don't be a rock and roll musician. Look just like one, right?
Were you ever into that yourself?
What do you mean? Into what? Into what?
No. Into hair and clothes and image and thinking that was the way to get there. That was the way to get it.
Never to that degree where I thought, okay, you know, by doing this and that, I will, you know, I will achieve something. There was definitely a point in my life where I was very much into the idea of the way I looked, and that you know, that's what was important. And I spent a lot of time with kind of cultivating that.
What did you wear in those days?
Oh,
what had magic for you?
Well, I actually found a pair of black suede shoes, very similar to the way Johnny found them. These were the pair of shoes. I was walking down the street one day on the Lower East Side, and I spotted a pile of garbage, and I saw a suitcase lying on top of the garbage. And I said, well, that's good. I can use that suitcase to carry my painting equipment around with, because that's what I was doing. I was painting apartments still at the time. And I picked up the suitcase, started walking down the street, and I heard something shaking around in there, and opened it up, and it was a pair of black suede shoes, pointed, one-of-a-kind shoes that I'd never seen before. So those shoes sort of became my identity for a couple years. They were my favorite possession. I felt like no one else had these shoes but me, so it made me special. But I've always felt that the 50s, in terms of clothing for men, has been the most interesting period of fashion for men. So a lot of the clothing that I was wearing was stuff that I would find in thrift stores, these one-of-a-kind shirts and jackets and pants, that it wasn't. Again, it wasn't nostalgia. It wasn't like, oh, okay, he's wearing a 50s shirt. It was a beautiful shirt, no matter when it was made.
Describe one of your favorite shirts that you bought then.
Oh, this is one that got stolen on the set, too. So this is what's crazy. It was in the 50s, they had these things called shirt jacks. You know what those are?
Yeah.
So this was a black shirt jack, long-sleeved, with a short collar. And down the front of it were these alternating, about inch-wide stripes running straight down of red, gray, and white right down the front, tapering into a V at the bottom. I wore that shirt every day until Brad Pitt saw it in my closet and decided to use it as part of Johnny's wardrobe, which, in fact, what we ended up doing was going into my closet and completely designing his costume out of my closet. And 2 weeks into the shooting, everything got stolen.
By who?
By some drug addicts in the neighborhood. Someone inadvertently left the wardrobe van unattended for 10 minutes. We were shooting in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And the stuff was gone in an instant. And they found them. They found the guys. And they said, yeah, we got your clothes. We're not giving them back because we like them so much. And the cops, you know, the cops were there. They said, yeah, listen, if you guys want to keep shooting in Williamsburg, you better just leave them alone. So that was my sacrifice. I figured if Coppola can mortgage his house, I can.
You can give up that shirt job.
God, it was painful though. It was painful.
Okay, time to talk about hair. The pompadour that you've given the character of Johnny Suede is this caricature of a pompadour.
It is.
It's so high.
It's an exaggeration.
Yeah.
Right.
Tell me why you designed it like that.
Well, again, because I didn't want this just in any way for people to think, okay, this is a guy who's just comfortably ensconced in the 50s nostalgia. I wanted it to be as if his infatuation was verging on an addiction, an infatuation to the degree that it was imprisoning him. It was hurting him in some way. So I said, yes. Yeah. So the pompadour he's going to have is going to be huge. It's going to seem like it may, if he leans his head too far to one side, his head will fall over. It will at times make him look like a total fool. At other times, make him look monstrous. But I said, there's no way that it can just be a simple, normal pompadour.
My guest is Tom DiCillo, writer and director of the new movie Johnny Suede. More after the short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Tom DiCillo. He wrote and directed the new movie Johnny Suede. He was also the cinematographer on the movie Stranger Than Paradise. I was reading your script for the one-man play.
Mm-hmm.
And in the script, it describes Johnny Suede's voice and his guitar playing as passable, no more.
Right.
And I'm wondering whether that direction was because of the amount of musical talent you brought to the role.
Yeah, definitely.
Or because you just didn't want this character to be particularly talented in that respect.
Well, it definitely has to do with my own aspirations, because there are times where I would pick up the guitar and I would like try to play the guitar, and I say to myself, I just can't believe how difficult this is. I mean, how can so many people be able to play this instrument? It would just blow my mind. But I definitely thought that would be sort of funny in the character, to have a guy whose aspirations were much bigger than his capabilities.
The songs that you give him are pretty interesting. Somebody else wrote that song.
Someone wrote the music for them. I wrote the...
Oh, you wrote the lyrics?
I wrote the lyrics.
Great.
Yeah.
There's... would you sing or recite one or two of the lyrics? There's two songs I'm thinking of. One,
which ones?
One is the one that starts, I went to work in Midtown and wear a three-piece suit.
Right.
And the other is the one that that the Nick Cave character gives him. And
right.
That's a really weird little lyric.
That's a weird song. It goes on.
Would you do some of that?
It goes on. It goes, in fact, I wrote this song one morning. I just got out of bed. I was making my coffee, and I just started singing this song. It goes, I'm not going to sing it, but I'll recite it.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in a motel room the night Daddy lost his job. Just after one, he pulled a gun and blew the brains out of some poor slob. That was the tale my mama told as soon as I could understand. But hard as I tried, I couldn't take no pride in a daddy who had killed a man. They call me mama, 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 mama's boy, but hey, I just don't care. I've been a mama, 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 mama's boy since daddy got the electric chair.
And what exactly inspired you to write this lyric?
Because in a way, it just struck me as funny that a guy could be a mama's boy and sort of like attribute it to the fact that his daddy killed somebody. I don't know. It just struck me as really kind of funny that you always hear about people being mama's boys, right? And you have an image of them as being sort of like Freddie Bartholomew types. But it just struck me. I mean, how funny it would be to have someone like Nick Cave sing that song.
Now, you started as a cinematographer.
Well, we can clarify that. I started as a writer and a director. When I was at school with Jim Jarmusch, I was assigned completely by accident to shoot a film for him, a student exercise.
And that was Permanent Vacation?
That was one film before Permanent Vacation. So I never studied cinematography. We just enjoyed working together. I liked his ideas. He liked mine. So I shot Permanent Vacation for him. Again, you know, with no intent of ever shooting anything else. Then he asked me to shoot Stranger Than Paradise. And again, that was the first time I'd ever shot anything in 35 millimeter. So, It was just something for me to do. It was not something that I ever considered myself, and I'm not demeaning it or diminishing its importance. It's just when people say, "So you were a cinematographer," I say, "Well, no, I wasn't. I just happened to shoot a few films."
What were your ideas for, say, Stranger Than Paradise?
My ideas were, because Jim was adamant about keeping everything sort of formal and reserved and a little distant. And I said, that's a great idea. You know, he had already come up with the concept of having everything be one shot, all the scenes be one shot. I said, now, what we're going to have to do is to make sure that the shots sustain a certain sort of visual interest throughout the take. So what I did was I choreographed little camera moves, little quirky things that are unexpected. For example, a shot of John Lurie lying on the bed, someone knocks on the door, he doesn't even get up. What happens is the camera goes and answers the door. I said, let's do that. Let's have the camera go to the door before he gets up and answers it. So the camera pans to the door. A moment later, John Lurie gets up and answers the door. I just tried to infuse what I felt was a kind of odd comic strip humor into the camera movement and the framing.
Did you get offers to shoot other movies after the success of Stranger
Yes,
Than Paradise?
I did. I turned down a lot. I was then interviewed by American Cinematographer, and they asked me, and I said, no, I don't plan on shooting anything else. I would rather paint apartments. We won't go into why, but...
Why not?
It's still a little painful in a certain way. I finally decided what can I say here? Shooting films for other people, if that's what you want to do, can be very rewarding. You know, you just do it. I had other aspirations, and it just was shooting those films really made it clear that, well, you know, I've got some ideas of my own. I think it's time I put them to use. So that's sort of what that illustrated. But I got other offers, which I refused for a while, until I was broke, and I, you know, like I said, I was still painting apartments. I was in a bathroom somewhere painting a mirror, and I was masking it off with a piece of newspaper from the New York Times, and that's how I found out that Stranger Than Paradise won the Golden Camera Award at Cannes.
You're kidding?
No, I'm serious.
Did you feel shut out?
No, not shut out. Whatever. It was my decision. It was my decision. Not shut out, you know. So most of my other offers were from first-time directors wanting to repeat the success of Stranger Than Paradise.
Mm-hmm.
So ultimately, I just really said, okay, that's it. No more. I'm not going to shoot anymore.
So what's the next step for you? Are you working on another movie?
Yes, I am. It's a little crazy. I'm actually casting my next film right now.
Uh-huh. And what is it?
It's a film called Box of Moonlight. And I see Johnny Suede as sort of a variation on a slightly American fairy tale. Okay? This one takes like almost that same idea but modernizes it in another way. It's about a guy who lives a very structured and ordered life. He's married. He's got a kid. He's out of town on a job. And suddenly the job gets canceled, and he ends up with 5 days of free time. And he doesn't know what to do with it. It sort of scares him. But he decides not to tell his wife about it and to take this little step out into the unknown by himself. And that's what the film's about, what happens in those 5 days.
That sounds interesting. Well, listen, I thank you a lot for doing the interview.
Thank you.
Tom DiCillo wrote and directed the new movie Johnny Suede. It opens next week.